Blog Talk Radio.
To Watford, three on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! And Indiana wins the ball game. Christian Watford with a three.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
This is Indiana. Yeah, we do it big. Boston on the Big Ten. You know what it is.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Assembly Call, a decidedly less excited and joyful episode of the Assembly Call than what we had against the Wisconsin Badgers on Tuesday, as Indiana loses 54-47 today to the Northwestern Wildcats. You know, I woke up this morning, I was nervous. I've been nervous about this game ever since the Wisconsin game ended. You know, with a young team, sometimes young teams do not respond well to success. You know, you have a big victory, you get patted on the back, you get told how good you are. Sometimes you forget about what it took to get there. And today, Indiana came out, did not play focused, did not play with great energy, really, until it was too late. And they end up losing this game 54-47. There's a whole lot to break down, to discuss. We're going to do that. I'm going to be joined today by Andy Bottoms, my co-host on today's show. You know, usually we start this out with our banner moment. There wasn't really much of a banner moment today for Indiana. I think the only guy that you can really look at and say that he had even a halfway decent game is Noah Vonleh, who did have 17 points, did have 12 rebounds, was really the only Hoosier who was bringing it there for a while, really for most of the game, you know. And even though he didn't shoot well and Noah missed some relatively easy shots, you know, he was able to be productive, which is more than you can say for a lot of the other Hoosiers. So that's, you know, really, other than, you know, Hanner Mosquera Perea's block and some of the play by Austin Etherington there at the end of the first half, there's just not much to say positive about this game. Give Northwestern credit. They came in. They played their style. They dictated the style and the terms of this game. They won both halves. They made big shots in the second half when they needed to. And so this was a good combination. This wasn't just, you know, Indiana pissing it away, although that's a big part of it because Indiana was clearly the more talented team. But you got to give Northwestern credit because they got us to play at their pace. They held an, you know, we're a decent offensive team, and they held us to 0.75 points per possession. It just all around was not a good game, and there's a lot of negatives to break down, and we're going to do that today. So let me bring in Andy Bottoms. Let's get his Bottoms line, and we'll move on from there. Andy, what did you think of today's IU performance?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I've been trying to come up with words I can actually say on here. It was, I mean, there's plenty of probably blame and breakdown and whatever else to go around, but quite honestly, I was impressed with Northwestern's defense. You know, one of the things, you know, coming into the game that had been discussed, I think they even threw it up on the, you know, pregame on BTN, was, you know, talking about their defensive efficiency and, you know, what had been a pretty big change, even in, you know, half the season under Chris Collins. That definitely proved to be the case today. They're well, you know, kind of well-coached in that regard and really packed the lane. I mean, their possessions were, they had four guys standing in the lane. And I thought they did a really good job of helping off of other guys when IU tried to beat them off the dribble. And I think if you look at the assist numbers, at least what they were at a certain point, you know, IU had 6 assists on 15 made baskets. Actually, I'm surprised there were 15 made baskets. But, I mean, quite honestly, you know, IU was trying to get everything done off the dribble. They did a great job of helping off. And it felt like it was equal parts IU forgetting what got them, you know, the win on Tuesday, and IU not really having a plan B, which I think is what, you know, takes a little bit to where we'll probably get into some coaching things, and we'll probably get into some player things and talk through both of those. But I thought that, you know, through both those, IU just didn't look like they had any plan on offense, and there was that stretch where Vonleh really got going. But I'm not sure he touched the ball after he came back in the game after that, or at least not for a few minutes. And just a, you know, any kind of goodwill, positive momentum, tournament-related momentum that was gained on Tuesday was all given back tenfold with a game like this today, because if the team couldn't handle success and that's what we want to chalk this up to, then I have a hard time understanding how they're going to handle losing to arguably the worst team in the conference at home.
I mean, look, you know, I'm just kind of searching for an explanation. You know, we talked again. We have harped on this all year that this team is going to win games they're not supposed to. They're going to lose games they're not supposed to. And, you know, I'm just telling you, I always have a gut feeling about these games. And it's not always right, but, you know, the day of the Kentucky game, I just had a feeling. And a lot of our big upsets, I've had a feeling. That Wisconsin game, I had a feeling when I woke up. I just thought we were going to win that one. And I've had a sense of foreboding about this game ever as soon as the Wisconsin game ended. I even got in a discussion with my dad about it on the phone. He was like, it'll be okay. You know, they'll be ready to play. Don't worry about it. And I couldn't shake it, because with this team especially, you know, this is still a team that, you know, they still, you know, they've got a gel, and we have guys. Here's the thing for me, Andy, okay, and maybe this is the next place that we need to go, is let's talk about the leadership of this team. You know, Will has done a good job of leading by example with effort. I think Yogi in most games has done a good job of leading by example, and Evan Gordon's done a good job. To me, this is a huge game for those three guys. Got a lot of young players who are dealing with their first huge win. I mean, Stan Robinson's ego coming into today had to be huge, you know, like a hot air balloon. And, you know, he's a freshman. He's being, you know, everybody's lauding him because he played so well, and that's to be expected, you know. And so, you know, so you look at that, and to me, this is a game where you need, you know, and it's Northwestern, it's at home, it's a game a lot of the young guys probably think, okay, we can just roll the ball out and win. That, to me, is a game where your leadership has to step up and say, hey, we know how games are in the Big Ten, you got to bring it every day. And what I was most disappointed in today is you look at, you know, you look down the stat line, Will is 1-for-7, 3 boards. Yogi's 2-for-14 with 1 assist. Evan Gordon is 3-for-12 with 1 assist. And in a day of really bad shot selection, perhaps took the worst shot of the day with that three-pointer with 22 seconds left. And so I thought, in a game like this where you lose by 7 points, to me that's the difference, is those guys at home didn't come ready to lead, I didn't think. You know, and I hate criticizing those three guys, but to me, when you look at blame for this game, it starts with those guys. And I realize, you know, Will has struggled a little bit to kind of find himself offensively, and he had an injury. But we've got to expect more from him. I think it's almost an insult to him if we don't expect more. Same with Yogi, same with Evan Gordon. And so as I look at this game, and I know everybody's going to heap the blame at the feet of Crean, and people are going to be frustrated that Stanford Robinson didn't have a great game, and yada, yada. But I look at it, and the majority of my disappointment gets laid at the feet of those three guys.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, I think, you know, as you look down the performances of those guys, I thought Yogi's was really rough, because, you know, he didn't take as many threes as he did against Wisconsin. He still went 4, but I mean, 2-for-14 from the floor, and there were times when he would get close to the basket, but, you know, there's one he tried to kind of reverse when he didn't need to, and they were letting some contact go by the rim, but I thought there were times that he made shots too difficult for himself to try to get there, and there were just times where they forced things, but it seemed like offensively so much was trying to come off the dribble that they're really, I mean, you know, he's really the one of the guys that IU would expect to be able to get to the rim against almost anybody, and he really couldn't do it. I think a couple times tried to pull up and take a mid-range shot, but a couple of the mid-range shots he took were really off balance and just not very good, and you know, we saw on Tuesday night him getting yanked and then put back in. He really responded well. I thought the opposite happened today. He seemed like he came back in, took a bad shot, and got pulled right back out. Sheehy, I thought, was, just kind of some of those games where he just blended in. I feel like we kind of saw against, you know, maybe some of the lesser teams in the non-conference where he didn't do anything spectacular. He did a few little things and just kind of, like I said, blended in. But I do think there were, you know, spots where, you know, for him to be able to step up and get a big offensive rebound or do something else where was missing. And Gordon was an odd one. I mean, for me, some of the shots he took that were, I mean, the three-pointer at the end was not good at all, and he waited a while to foul there where they ran off 5 or 6 seconds before calling a timeout. I thought some of his end-game stuff was bad. Some of the shots in the flow of the game I attribute to the guys he was playing with. I mean, there were times when he was literally the only guy out there that you thought might actually shoot the ball. So I think that might have skewed some of his shot numbers a little bit. But he, certainly struggled and taking six threes when he wasn't hitting them. I mean, even he against Northwestern or against Wisconsin was doing a good job getting to the basket. So I think that's fair to look at some of the things that those guys did. I think there's, you know, just this, there were possessions on offense where, you know, you could count the number of passes on one hand. You could count the number of times the ball got inside the three-point line on one hand. And it just, you know, they didn't make, while Northwestern had a good game plan defensively, they didn't really make them work to do anything above and beyond what they initially set out to do, which was really cut off driving lanes and pack it in. And it's exactly the kind of defense I expected Wisconsin to play on Tuesday night, quite frankly, and certainly what I think IU will see. And not everybody can do it, I guess, but I really thought they did a great job of helping off other guys because at times Vonleh is in the game, even if he had position in the post, I don't know how you get him the ball because there's a guy, you know, draped on him that's sagging off of somebody else, just daring guys to make shots, and nobody could do it.
So, you know, you started to talk about the coaching, and we need to get into that next because I think pretty much everybody thought that Tom Green did a great job against Wisconsin, and he did. And he, I think, pushed a lot of the right buttons against Penn State. And one of the oddities today is, once again, you know, some of the strangest in-game buttons that he pushes, like you tweeted, it's becoming a Cream thing. You know, it's at the 12-minute mark. You know, we're having a little bit of trouble in the second half. And in comes Johnny Marlin, Jeff Howard. You know, you kind of put in those bench guys, and we all of a sudden go on a run. And it happened again today. I mean, frankly, the only really good stretch of basketball we played in the second half today was when that Johnny Marlin group was on the floor. And I think that included, it was Marlin, it was Howard, I believe Etherington was out there, Evan Gordon was out there, and at first Noah was out there. They eventually took Noah out and brought Connor in the game. But that team, I believe they took it from a 7 to 8 point game and got a lead, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm pretty sure because Marlin ended up playing for a good 5, 6, 7 minutes, something like that. I mean, we'll have to look at the numbers. But once again, you know, you look at that, and again, it's kind of an oddity, but it's working for him. And the frustration is, you know, took the last two games in the Penn State game and the Wisconsin game, and he's done that. Then when he's brought the other guys in, they've stepped it up. Unfortunately, today, you know, other than that 1-3 that Yogi jacked up towards the end of the game, you know, he wasn't really able to get much else going, and the other guys just weren't really able to do anything. You know, so really, Indiana, I have a feeling the plus-minus is going to bear this out, but in the second half, Indiana's best lineup was when Johnny Marlin was on the floor. And even though I railed against that when it happened against Michigan State, it's becoming something in the second half that I guess this team needs to get turned around for whatever reason. You know, but again, like you said, there was a point there once Hunter came in for Noah where literally Evan Gordon is your only offensive threat, you know, and I have Troy jacked up a three at one point, and, you know, it wasn't pretty, but it did get results. So before we get into all the bad coaching decisions, not pressing, not adjusting on offense, all the different things, you know, I mean, what do you have to say about these weird moves Tom Crean is making in the second halves of games that, for whatever reason, defy logic, and at least for those 4, 5, 6 minutes, really seem to be working?
Well, I was going to say what you just said as far as that they defy logic. I mean, I think, as I said before, you know, I'm all for the, you know, the accountability and sitting some of these guys down when they're not playing well. I think the challenge for me has started to become we're doing that. You know, you just can't – I don't know. To me, I don't understand the process of doing that while leaving no other options on the floor. Because particularly in this game, you know, nobody's really shooting that well. And it wasn't like you had a couple guys you could really ride. I mean, Gordon ended up 3-for-12. So it was him and Vonleh for a while. And that was really the stretch where Noah was, you know, grabbing offensive rebounds. He hit a three there because he couldn't, like, you know, one of those situations I just described where he couldn't post up and he stepped out and made a shot. I just don't know. Kind of felt like that was just being done at the expense of having any, you know, offensive capability on the floor at all. And while it did help defensively, and I thought Howard was outstanding on Drew Crawford, which is something I did not think I would ever say, I thought he did a really good job defensively. There has to be some kind of balance where you're at least providing some kind of threat on the other end of the floor, because it didn't make Northwestern do anything different than what they'd done before. It made it easier for them to really, you know, sag in on Vonleh. So I don't mind, you know, inserting those guys for a brief stretch, but if you're going to put Marlon and Howard in as those kinds of energy guys, I feel like, you know, the other three players on the floor have to be able to do something or provide some kind of threat, and that was a case where, you know, maybe Robinson could have been in the game. I felt like he really did not play hardly at all in the second half, and I didn't think he was, I mean, he wasn't great. I didn't know that he was awful. He had issues, you know, finishing and getting close to the rim that he did before, but I thought he at least gave another threat that could do that. And so if you had, you know, Northwestern put their, you know, the best perimeter defender on Yogi, at least you had Stan who still could try to get to the basket. I thought that was, you know, a case where maybe a tweak to that lineup is, you know, you want to play smaller, that's fine, but put Robinson out there with Gordon and Vonleh, and then you've at least got three guys who can score, which sounds like you're settling to have three guys that can score, but I felt like that would have been, you know, better than what was there. So it definitely, like, I can't begin to explain why it seems to be effective, and quite honestly why, if that's what feels like is needed, it isn't done earlier, like in the first half, to maybe send that message, because some of these, you kind of get down to crunch time, and then, you know, Marlon's in there, and it's getting to be a pretty tight game, 7 minutes left. I mean, I was surprised he shot that one. Now the shot clock was running out, but, I mean, you just have guys, I mean, he's shot faking from behind the three-point line. They know he's not going to shoot. I don't know. I get the sending a message and trying to light a fire under guys, but I feel like at times it's at the expense of having a capable offensive team on the floor.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it continues to shock me that it works, and it does seem unnecessary, especially once Noah went out, you know, to keep that lineup out there where they're so limited offensively. So as we're talking about this, and, you know, let me ask you about this kind of decision, this trend that we're seeing. So Troy continues to start, and he's struggling. You know, I have to say, I was actually, I guess you could say, proud of Troy in the second half when he got in there, because he didn't play that much in the first half, didn't do much. You know, he's not getting the opportunity to get a lot of his highlight plays, and we know that he's a guy who thrives on that. I don't say that negatively, but he's a young guy, and he's motivated by personal glory right now. You know, I mean, I think if you watch him play, not saying that he's not a team player, but those things really get him hyped, and he's not getting a lot of them. And I really thought that, you know, with how he played in the first half and not getting much time and then getting benched to start on the second half, that, you know, not knowing him, but, you know, as a freshman, thought maybe his attitude would start to suffer. And I was impressed. I want to give him some props in the second half, because when he got in there, he was active. And it didn't translate into any points, but, you know, I thought he played some good defense. He got a few rebounds. The three-pointer was a little ill-advised, but he was active, and his body language was good. However, with him continuing to start and Stanford now being the first guy off the bench, we're not seeing those two play very much together. And I thought after the Penn State game, one thing that we started to notice was the chemistry between those two guys, and that having them on the floor, you know, really seemed to be a positive for this team. And I don't recall, I don't think they played very much against Wisconsin. They certainly didn't play much together today. And I think that's a bit of a missed opportunity. You know, if you're going to have Troy still in the starting lineup, you know, what you're saying is that he's a key piece of this team. But unfortunately, it's almost like as soon as the second half comes, now it's like he's a bench warmer. You know, and he only comes in when you're putting in that, you know, the kind of quote-unquote effort group to get things turned around there at about the 12-minute mark. And then he's not getting to play with the other good players, especially a guy like Stan, who he plays well with. I'm kind of trying to make sense of this. Maybe there isn't any sense to make of it, but maybe there's something going on that I'm not seeing. Do you, Andy, at all, we know Troy's been struggling, but do you understand kind of how he's being used? Because starting and then the role he's taking in the second half don't seem to really be computing with me much at all.
Yeah, I think what is becoming difficult for him is particularly in a game like this where, you know, he's not a guy who in a normal half-court offensive sequence is really going to be able to do a great deal for this team right now. If he's going to score in the half court, it's probably off of a putback of some kind or maybe a sharp cut to the basket. But other than that, he's going to do his damage out in transition. I think we saw against Wisconsin he really struggled defensively, and I think that presents an issue. But, you know, he had that one pass from the beginning of the game where he's trying to throw cross court in a, you know, slowdown game. I think, you know, in a game like this, it became somewhat apparent. It just wasn't necessarily a game he was going to be able to flourish in. But I do think it becomes difficult because I think the message being sent is, it was almost the same thing when Hollowell kept starting, right? And I'm not going to compare how those two guys have played, but it was, okay, well, you see some moves around it in terms of who's gaining minutes and who's losing minutes that seem to speak to performance equals playing time where there's some correlation there. And yet, even in these cases over these last few games, I mean, he hasn't, you know, they've won these games, they've changed the lineup, he's remained in it. He really hasn't been a huge part of those, of either of those games. And so I do think it's kind of an odd message and maybe a case where, you know, you put him and kind of pair him and Robinson up off the bench somehow and let those guys get to play together, you know, a little bit more frequently and maybe move a guy like Etherington into the starting lineup. I don't really know, but it definitely doesn't, you know, jive all that well with, you know, when you kind of, you know, layer performance with playing time and kind of figure that piece out. But he's definitely struggling right now, and I think he's going to need a game where, you know, he can really get out, get a few baskets in transition, even if that kind of gets him going, you know, just to see the ball go through the basket at some point might be good. But, you know, I thought today, I don't know that he forced anything. That three he took was at the end of the shot clock when they really had not had a good possession anyway. So I do feel like you said he didn't seem like he tried to do too much, but I also don't know that he's, you know, in a place to really be successful right now based on the way he's playing and to your point, the way he's being used.
Yeah, I've hesitated to read off any of the advanced statistics simply because I haven't wanted to vomit all over my computer. But we should address them. Indiana scored 0.75 points per possession. The effective field goal percentage was 28.5%. Rebounding percent, say 27.7%, not very good. Free throw rates, 28.3%. The basic theme here is the stats were not good for Indiana, not that you really need me to tell you that. However, I want to make this point because I've seen a couple people, and smart people who I respect, tweet out that Indiana took much better care of the basketball today based on the turnover number. And yes, Indiana's turnover percentage is 14.3%, which is much better than it's been. They did only turn the ball over 9 times, and so that's, you know, yet the second game in a row we've had fewer than 10 turnovers. And, okay, that's good, and there's some positives to be taken there. It also must be mentioned that the tempo today was much slower than in games past. However, Andy, is that not a deceiving statistic? Because that doesn't, you know, the turnover number doesn't include just terrible shots. You know, and Indiana goes 15-60 from the floor today. That's 45 missed shots. And granted, some of those were bunnies and easy shots and the kind of things that you would think Indiana would make. But some of them, I mean, maybe some, I mean, 5 to 10 at least, were just horrible shots where you look at it and you're thinking, you know, what kind of shot is that? That's just not a very smart shot to take. And that's not included in the turnover number. And so I think when we talk about focus, when we talk about carelessness with this team, we've talked a lot about, you know, just the terrible passes where you just throw it to a guy and he's going the other way for, you know, for a layup. And we didn't have as many of those turnovers today, so that's good. But, you know, in terms of focus and carelessness, you know, I didn't think just because Indiana had 9 turnovers, it doesn't mean that they were especially focused or careful with possession, because I thought they really just gave away some possessions with either not having a plan or taking a bad shot or just really poor decision-making. Am I being too harsh, or do you think that's an accurate assessment?
No, I think that's true. I mean, the other thing I would point out, too, is, you know, Northwestern came in 34th in adjusted defensive efficiency. However, they rank 312th in defensive turnover rate. So they're not a team that turns people over. They don't press people. And they really want to slow the game down and really make it difficult to score, but they don't do they're not, you know, making their money on the defensive end by forcing a lot of turnovers. It's just not how they play. So I think in some ways you almost have to try a little bit to turn the ball over if you really want to. And I do think it's fair to try to lump in some of those things like, you know, poor shots and things like that, because that's giving away a possession in the same way that a turnover was. So I think based on how IU had played and as well as what Northwestern typically does defensively, I think it was going to be kind of bound to be a game where you're not going to see a great deal of turnovers. And so that didn't necessarily shock me, and I don't know that that's anything to kind of hang your hat on as you think about some of the, you know, success the team's had in not turning the ball over down the stretch the last couple of games. I mean, it's great that there weren't a ton of them that just compounded the other issues, but, you know, in and of itself, that offers very little consolation for anybody today.
Yeah, you know, I tweeted out a request for questions. We're not really getting questions. We're getting more comments. Justin Hodges, well, F is all I can say. Jimmy Omareso, I guess we don't have to talk about rushing the floor today. Hashtag this sucks. No, I don't think we do. Our buddy Scott McKinley, this loss is inexcusable. Now we get to go to MSU and get our butts handed to us. We'll address that in a second. But Josh Olmstead asks, three-point shooting is the obvious Achilles heel of this team. How can this be addressed as the season goes on? Can it? You know, it has, but actually at some points during the Big Ten season, Indiana has shot decently well from downtown. You know, but I think a game like this was coming where jump shots just are not falling. And I think part of the struggle today that a lot of us had watching the game is it just didn't look like Indiana adjusted at all what they were doing offensively. I mean, let's dig into the Hoosiers' offense a little bit here because, you know, there just wasn't anything to hang your hat on today. No one's making jump shots. You know, you can't really get to the bucket like you did. Indiana only shoots 17 free throws. We've become accustomed to shooting many more. You know, and you've talked about how Northwestern was really packing it in, making it difficult to get Noah the ball. He still was able to find a way to get 17 points and continued to be our best three-point shooter, knocking down 2 of 4 again. But, you know, address that question in terms of can the outside shooting be addressed? I mean, I think not really. We kind of are what we are right now. In some games, you know, we might have a guy like Yogi get hot, but we can't really count on it. But what would you have liked to see Indiana do offensively? You know, maybe the first half you're kind of feeling it out and you see what happens. And what kind of adjustments would you have wanted to see in the second half to just give this team a little bit more of a chance on offense?
Yeah, I think, I mean, as far as the three-point shooting goes, it's interesting, you know, to look on Pomeroy for, you know, conference games. I use the best three-point shooting team in the Big Ten coming into this game. So that's startling, obviously, but I think a case of, you know, law of averages and things like that, you know, the same things everybody cited when it's like, well, Yogi was bound to make one on Tuesday night. Well, this team was bound to shoot the way that it shot over the majority of the season. So, there's really nothing. You're not going to really change personnel. I think there's really nobody on the team in large part that you'd say they need to run more set plays for to get wide open looks from three, because I'm not sure there's a case. You know, last year I think of all the times the three-point shot went up, and I as a fan would feel pretty, you know, very few times would I yell something out and be like, you know, a no or a what are you doing? There are very few guys on the team this year that wouldn't elicit that response from me at this point. So, you know, I do think more of the shots today were contested than needed to be. I mean, it's one thing to shoot open threes. You can't just have a team full of guys who's not willing to take shots out there, which, you know, we kind of saw in spurts in this game. But, you know, you're not gonna do too well, you know, with a setup like that. So I don't know that there's too much you can do there. You know, as far as, you know, things I would have done differently, I do think, you know, trying to find ways to get Vonley the ball more. One of the guys who, and I think Dustin Dopierak tweeted out that Olaf or Northwestern had 6 blocks in the game. I thought he was a big factor, but I also felt like it was a chance to, you know, do you let Vonley face up against him and try to go at him a little bit more, try to get him into foul trouble. I thought, you know, continuing to go to the rim. I think IU took 3 threes in the first few minutes of the half again. It felt like a little bit of a redo of what happened in the early second half against Wisconsin. And even though things weren't going well by the basket today, I don't think there's any reason this team needs to come out and shoot, you know, 3 threes in 3 minutes. It just doesn't make sense. And you know, but I do think there had to be more, you know, maybe it's more ball screens or something like that where you get Vonleh involved in that regard, because we've seen him cut to the basket. We know he can step out and make shots. I didn't see a ton of that, and it was just guys just pounding the ball and really not a lot of movement, you know, whatsoever. So, I don't know that I have the perfect answer for the way the team played today, but I think continuing to attack and doing more to get Vonleh in situations that would put pressure on the defense would have probably been at least the first couple of things I would have done on the offensive end. And I think on defense, and we can get into this a little bit now, is I have no concept of why IU didn't press Northwestern at any point until the last minute of this game. And for anybody who doesn't understand why that's a good idea, if I don't know if this can be done, Big Ten Network has it, but go back and watch the last couple of minutes of the Illinois-Northwestern game when Illinois had been down and started to press Northwestern. They almost came back and won because Northwestern could hardly get the ball across half court. And they are missing their starting point guard. Eventually their other starter had gotten in foul trouble, or their other point guard had gotten in foul trouble. They really struggled with it at times, even in the brief period that IU ran it. And, you know, we hear about depth. We've seen IU experiment with it in different scenarios. I didn't understand why to either try to get the game at the tempo that you want, to switch things up, to do whatever it is. And so, you know, to let the game really be played at a pace that Northwestern really wanted, I mean, shooting aside, you know, this game's still in the 50s. Even if they shoot a little bit better, it's probably in the 60s, which is exactly where Northwestern wants to be. It does not make any sense whatsoever to me that you wouldn't try that. To me, trying that is a far better strategy than running out a lineup with Johnny Marlin and Jeff Howard and somebody else who won't look at the basket in it. I don't understand that in the slightest. And I think, you know, if you look at one thing, we can look at lineups, we can do whatever. That's the thing that to me is the most puzzling, because it seemed to be the thing that was, it felt the most obvious to do after having watched Northwestern at least a little bit this season and seeing what they've struggled with and where they've done well. And even, you know, Northwestern, Twitter account, I fully believe NU is going to hang on here. I retweeted this earlier. But any coach who waits until the last couple of minutes to press NU should be fired on the spot. So I'm not saying that, but that is a Northwestern fan who's extremely familiar with their team saying there's no reason that anybody with athletic ability and depth shouldn't attack Northwestern in that way. And that was something that IU just didn't do to try to change things. And so I thought that was probably, if, you know, lineup stuff aside, and I'll try to look at that either, you know, later today or tomorrow in terms of some of the plus minus and how different lineups performed. I thought outside of some of those things and not looking like there was a plan B on offense, I thought the biggest thing to me was why not press, why not try something different defensively. That was at least the other thing that stood out for me.
Some good news. Will Sheehy said in the post game that he's going to be all right. Via Dustin Dopirak. Is it Dopirak or Dopirak? How do you pronounce it?
I think it's Dopirak is what I've heard, but I could be wrong.
You never get that right. Dustin Dopirak. I'm sorry, Dustin, if you listen to this. Will's going to be all right. Here's some other interesting stuff coming out. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, you know, you talk about why we didn't press. There's only a couple explanations. One explanation is that we just didn't scout and didn't watch film. I can't imagine that, you know, and especially if they have a ball game, we're out and only seven guys to play. You're right, it makes total sense. So the only thing that makes sense to me is that Crean just didn't trust his team to do it. Maybe he didn't trust our communication, didn't trust our energy. It's not something that we do normally, and he didn't want to do it. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense, and so
you still there, Jared? All right, this is Andy. Apparently, we're having similar issues on the show as IU did today on the basketball court. So we're taking turns calling back in here. I think Jared should be back on in a second. But I think probably not much else to dwell on with this one, except that I'm seeing some of these tweets from John Gasly. Today was Indiana's worst performance on offense, 0.74 points per possession in Big Ten play in almost 3 years. Last one of those came at Illinois in March of 2011. So not a lot of good there. And a few quotes starting to trickle out from, you know, some of the team. Gordon talked about, letting them dictate the tempo. Looks like Stan Robinson, I guess we thought the same things that were there in the Wisconsin game were going to be there. So, not a lot of answers from the players either, doesn't feel like. And I guess Kareem said something on the, post game in terms of, plenty of spots open to be won tomorrow. I guess we can, kind of take from that whatever we want. But maybe, the thing to do before we wrap up here is to start to kind of figure out what this is going forward, because, interestingly, if you had told me that IU was going to be 2-3 after the first five games of the Big Ten season, I probably would have believed it. I don't think I would have predicted the way that it had, got to those two wins, but now 2-3, I think in a far more precarious position from a tournament perspective, not just because of losing, but I think, what IU had avoided to this point was kind of an inexplicable loss, now is on the resume in addition to the fact that there really no out-of-conference wins. So I think this team's going to have to go on a pretty good run from here on out to really make a compelling case to get into the tournament based on, other things we've seen from a historical precedent standpoint. So, but the immediate focus turns to going to Michigan State on Tuesday night. Michigan State pretty beat up at this point, trying to, patch together different lineups. Adrian Payne's been in and out. Travis Trice, I think, has been sick, but I think he's back. They've just had a slew of injuries to start the season, but have still managed to, hang on and beat Ohio State up there last week. Also, took beat Minnesota in a pretty close game. So, I don't think a lot of positives to take from this game on the road trip to East Lansing. And when you couple that with the fact of how these two teams played when they were in Bloomington, when I'm fairly certain that Michigan State didn't trail at any point, or at least not at any point outside of the first couple minutes, it's not looking like a great situation for IU to be walking into. So I guess, and Jared's back, and maybe we'll kind of reverse the roles a little bit. What are you looking for from this team as it tries to bounce back from a roller coaster week in a roller coaster season as they go up to East Lansing? All right, well, Jared may still not be back with us because I still can't hear his audio at least. So I guess I'll give a couple quick thoughts and maybe we'll wrap things up here today for the show. But, for me, I think it's going to be real easy for, this team to hang its head. And I think done a decent job of bouncing back and largely being competitive in these situations this year. Probably the first game against Michigan State was the biggest exception to that. So, for me, we just try to see what they do defensively, see what changes are made to the lineup, and really kind of see how effective it is. I don't want it to get back to the point where it feels like we're throwing darts again in terms of lineups and what's going on out there. But I think, some of these, mid-half moves kind of feel that way. And I think it's a real tough spot for a team that, as much as we started to feel like after the Wisconsin game, we knew what to expect. I feel like this game takes all that away, and now you're back to not knowing what team's going to show up and how they're going to play at any given moment. So I would expect them to respond. I wouldn't necessarily expect a victory, and I think the stretch run for this team is going to start early after that, because you've got a sequence of games against, a lot of the middle-tier teams in the Big Ten. After that, where you've got Illinois at home, at Nebraska, Michigan at home, at Minnesota, Penn State at home, at Purdue, and then the last few games are a little bit tougher, with Iowa and Wisconsin back on the schedule and Ohio State. I think IU is going to have to go in that, looks like six-game stretch here. I'm not so sure they don't have to win all six, and I don't know that that's in any way realistic based on what we've seen this year, but it's where, even when I looked at the schedule to start the season, that was where it felt like they were going to have to start to gather momentum and really, you know, make a push toward the end of the year. I would be lying if I said that today's game gave me a great deal of confidence that that was possible, but I think it's going to be important for this team to at least show some signs of life again against Michigan State. And really not get pushed around, which is kind of what happened in the first game, especially with Vonleh, you know, really getting pushed around in the post against, you know, a more veteran and just a more physical front line. So that'll be one thing to look for. And I think, you know, shot selection and some of those things are going to be critical for this team. They can't, you know, continue to take some of the poor shots they did today. And that Jared mentioned earlier, those things essentially turned into turnovers. So even though the turnover numbers in and of themselves looked better today, I thought the shot selection was poor at times, and the team really lost track of what it did to be so successful against Wisconsin. So, again, I think it'll be maybe a good thing that it's a quick turnaround and they play again on Tuesday, because this is not a loss that's going to one you're going to want to sit on. Certainly a tough spot to rebound from a really disappointing game. So I think with that, Jared and I are going to call it a day on this. Still having issues with his audio. So wrap it up here with final thoughts. I mean, again, I thought the big things from a team standpoint was really doing a poor job of getting to the rim, being strong once they got there and taking good shots. I do credit some of that to Northwestern's defense, which, again, I thought was really well prepared and really good. From a coaching standpoint, I thought there really wasn't a great deal of adjustment when it became clear what Northwestern was going to do. Which was pretty obvious within minutes into the game when, you know, routinely they had four guys standing in the lane really trying to cut off driving lanes and cut off opportunities to the basket. And, you know, some of the lineup things I'll analyze, and we'll send that out if anybody wants to subscribe. They can go to the site and do that. So, you know, we'll be able to get into a little bit more of that there and see if, you know, any of our theories are proven out by the numbers. But thought a huge missed opportunity in terms of not pressing Northwestern was one that was pretty bad. And so I think, you know, for all the, you know, things that, you know, the positive things and the positive momentum this team built, it seemed like coming out of that Wisconsin game and even out of the Penn State game to a certain extent, I think so much of that was given back today. And it's almost, you know, one step forward and two steps back scenario for in a lot of ways. So we'll certainly be interesting to see how the team responds. And we'll be back on Tuesday night after the Michigan State game to discuss how that all shook out and what we saw from the team that, you know, was different from today. But I guess I would close with this in that I think a lot of things will be thrown out about a young team and, you know, that being a cause for this. I think we're at a point in the season where that can't be an excuse anymore. And there are enough veterans on this team and enough of these guys who are more than halfway through the season that to me, we have to be beyond the point where that's an excuse, because maybe that's an excuse against a more evenly matched team, but Northwestern is a team that IU should have absolutely beaten at home by double digits. And so, you know, I don't buy into that theory. To me, this was an inexcusable loss that you really can't have at this stage of the season. So for now, it's time to figure out how this team's going to respond and if there's any way in the world that they're going to make a push for an NCAA berth, which seems like a pretty steep uphill climb at this point. So we'll see. You know, the next game is the first step to figuring out those answers, and we'll be here to break all those down after the game against Michigan State. So that's Andy Bottoms for Jared Morris and the Assembly Call and today's show, and we'll talk to everybody Tuesday night.